الحمد لله وكفى والسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والذين جاهدوا فينا لنهدينهم سبلنا سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون والسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. This morning I was sitting with some of the brothers after Fajr, and I mentioned some things, and if you were here at Fajr, I'm going to repeat some of those same things just for the benefit of the general audience. Traditionally, if you look at our Islamic societies, there's always been a force and an atmosphere of ikhlas. Mothers would raise their children upon sincerity, teaching them to be sincere. Friends would encourage one another to sincerity. The ulama of the time would encourage the people towards sincerity. The a'imma of the masajid would encourage people towards sincerity. And that sincerity was true worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now their encouragement was something which resulted in a force within each individual that also drove each individual to analyze their own lives and to ask themselves whether they were sincere in their worship of Allah. See, we don't live in an Islamic society, so we have a very different situation. Because we are these types of people that we go into each environment and people expect us to be different. So I'm here in the masjid and Hussein is one person. When I go to work, Hussein is another person. When I go in front of my family, Hussein is a third person. When I go in front of my Muslim friends, I'm a fourth person. When I go in front of my non-Muslim friends, I'm a fifth person. We live a very split life. It's very divided in many ways, and psychologically it's very damaging. The benefit of an Islamic society is that the entire society is built upon ikhlas. Every individual is seeking the true worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The mother is encouraging her child. The child is encouraging the parents. The relatives are encouraging one another. The imam is encouraging the jama'ah. The ulama are encouraging the imams, etc. And when that lacks, it creates a very, very dangerous situation. And many of us experience it, and I know because people come to me with this concern so regularly. That in front of my friends, I'm one person. When I'm away, I'm another person. In the masjid, I'm one person. When I'm at work, I'm another person. Now, if you look at Islamic society, one of the great examples of ikhlas is Imam al-Ghazali. Incredible example of ikhlas. The reason being is that initially, when he was a student, there's a very, very often repeated story of his days of study. And he used to study in a madrasa. And when he was studying in the madrasa, he was extremely sincere in his studies. Now, at that time, the government used to fund the madrasas, meaning the khalifa. The khalifa of the time felt it a responsibility and felt it an honor upon himself that he would be able to fund these Islamic schools, which would then produce the judges of the courts, and all the courts were run according to the sharia, etc. So anyway, one day, someone came and complained to the Khalifa that none of the students in these madaris are sincere. There's no sincerity in these students. They're doing it for their own political means. They're doing it for their own economic advancement. Because at that time, becoming what today people will encourage people, you say, become a doctor, become an engineer. At that time, the big thing was to become an imam. Because you would get a job in a court. You would be working as a government employee. You'd be wealthy. You'd be respected, etc. So the Khalifa, he thought, if that's the case, that there are no sincere students in these madaris, then why should I waste my money in these madrasas? Why should I spend the government's money running these schools if the students are not sincere? So he took this criticism very seriously, and he himself started visiting various schools and asking students questions about why they're studying. So he went to one of the schools and he began to ask the students, why are you studying? Each of them individually, why do you study this deen? Why are you here? So one of them said, my father wants me to become an imam. The other one said that I want to become famous one day. The third one said that I want to write books and people will know my name. So each of them gave an answer which was not sincere for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So anyway, as the Khalifa was leaving that madrasa, he made a decision in his mind. And he said, if truly these students are so insincere that they're doing it for the sake of the world, then I'm going to shut down all these schools. Now, as he was leaving that school, he saw that there was a student way in the corner studying under a lamp, you know, one of those old traditional lamps that you would burn. So he said, you know, let me ask this last student. So on his way, he began to head towards that student. He said, assalamu alaikum. The student did not even respond. The student did not even say, wa alaikum assalam. So he again said to the student, assalamu alaikum. Finally, the student said, wa alaikum assalam. He said, how come you didn't respond to me? He said, I was busy doing my work. They said, oh, what are you doing? He said, oh, well, I'm reading these books of fiqh. He said, why are you reading these books of fiqh? He said, because in these books, I can learn how to please my Lord and how I can avoid displeasing my Lord. So when the Khalifa heard this, he said, well, wait a minute. Here's a single sincere student. If there's even one sincere student out of the hundreds of students that are studying here, then it's still valuable to keep this institution alive. Now that student ended up becoming the famous Imam al-Ghazali. Now the thing about Imam al-Ghazali was that he was always true to himself. He became a famous Imam. He became a famous scholar. He became extremely well known in his area of work, meaning the place where he was Imam, the place where he was a scholar. But in his deepest thoughts and his deepest heart, he felt that he wasn't truly worshiping Allah the way he should. So what he decided to do was to explore all of these various types of knowledges and try to find which one could truly get him to really, really be sincere in his worship towards Allah. So this was the famous time when he studied and then destroyed philosophy. He studied so many different methods of attaining nearness to Allah, until finally he came to the science of tasawwuf. Now he himself writes in his own writings that when I came to the science of tasawwuf, a problem arose. And that is that in order to study tasawwuf, you can't read a book, you have to go to a sheikh. But if I was to go to a sheikh, I would not be able to be the imam, I would not be able to be the scholar, I would not be able to guide the people the way I guide them. So now I was stuck. Part of me was saying, you have to leave your being imam. You have to leave your position of scholarship. You have to leave your being a mudarris. And you have to go to the shiuch and see what truth exists in tasawwuf. And the other half of him was saying that you can't go. All these people depend on you. You're so famous. If you leave, what will people say? What will people do? Anyway, he says that for 6 months, he battled within himself. Should I leave? Should I not leave? Should I leave? Should I not leave? Although he knew he needed to leave, but he couldn't get himself to do it. So he says, exactly after 6 months, I lost my voice. Now when he lost his voice, he had no choice, right? You can no longer give your Jummah talk. You can no longer teach. You can no longer give people advice. You can no longer lead the prayer. So he was forced to go and study under tasawwuf under the mashayikh, and he actually went to Damascus, and there's a famous place, and it still exists to this day, where he spent his time studying tasawwuf. Now, it was after his study of tasawwuf that he then wrote his major works. And in his major works, he himself writes that in tasawwuf, I found the truth of worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Meaning, I finally, after so many years, I developed my sincerity. And then he ultimately returned and he wrote his famous work, Ihya Ulumuddin. Now look at the benefit that has occurred from Ihya Ulumuddin. Right? What he thought was a benefit to all of mankind by being the imam, by being the scholar, in the end, none of that lasted. And you know that after Imam Ghazali passed away, people were confused by his writings and they actually went and burned his books. Very shortly in the history of Islam, after he passed away, people purposely went out to destroy his books. They purposely went and burned his books, yet his sincerity was such in that final book that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala preserved that book. So Ihya Ulumuddin is still alive today, And it's still one of the famous books of Islamic science. And it's so referred to. So again, it was his sincerity. And that sincerity arose from his environment. Meaning that search for sincerity, it's planted within a human being, but it has to be nourished by the environment. One of the major factors in his life, or one of the major nourishers in his life, was actually his mother. Now, there's a very interesting story about Imam Ghazali and his mother and his brother. Imam Ghazali had a younger brother. Imam Ghazali had an older brother who was older than him. Now, his older brother would not pray behind Imam Ghazali. He refused to pray behind his younger brother. So often he would not even pray in the masjid, he would pray at home. Now the people of the community, they began to complain. They said, you know, what kind of thing is this? Imam Ghazali is the imam of the masjid. He's the head of the community. And his brother refuses to pray behind him. What's going on here? There must be something wrong. So talk began to arise among the people and they began to discuss this issue. And it became such a big deal that eventually it also affected Imam Ghazali. He also began to feel that, look, although that's my older brother, and if he doesn't want to pray behind me, that's fine. But in the end, I'm still the imam of the masjid. Right? What push comes to shove, I am the imam of the masjid. I am not his younger brother in this capacity. So therefore, he should pray behind me. So Imam Ghazali, he remained silent for a period of time until it got to such a point that he could no longer take it. So he went and he complained to his mother. And he said to his mother, look, my brother, he doesn't pray behind me. And the people in the community, they're making a ruckus about this. So can you give him some advice that he should pray behind me? So the mother individually called in the elder brother of Imam Ghazali and said, look, you know, I recognize that you don't want to pray behind your younger brother. But the fact of the matter is that he is the imam of the masjid. And the community does look upon this negatively. So you should pray behind him. So I'm asking you, as a command from your mother, that you pray behind Imam Ghazali. So anyway, the next prayer, Imam Ghazali stood up on the musalla, and the elder brother walks in. So Imam Ghazali is extremely happy that today my older brother, he's going to pray behind me. All the community is seeing that my older brother is finally going to pray behind me. So he became very happy. Imam Ghazali called a takbir, and the elder brother also prayed behind him. In the second rak'ah, in the middle of the salah, the elder brother broke his salah and he went home and he prayed there. So now it was even a worse situation. That's like putting salt on the wound. Because as soon as the salah was over, Imam Ghazali looked to see his brother's face for some kind of peace in his heart, and he sees that his brother's not there, and the whole community begins speaking that what's going on. Now he came, but in the middle of the salah, he broke his prayer and he left. So what's going on with the older brother? So Imam Ghazali was very upset because this just made things so much worse. So he went to his mother immediately after the prayer. And he said to his mother, you know, before he didn't come, I could at least bear that. Now he comes and he breaks his salah in the middle and leaves from praying behind me. What does that show the community? So the mother calls in the older brother and says, is this true? That you, in the middle of the salah, you broke your salah and left praying behind your brother? So the older brother says, yes. She said, why did you do that? He said, because you told me to pray behind him. In the first rak'ah, he was concentrating on Allah. I felt that he was concentrating on Allah. In the second rak'ah, his mind was totally someplace else. So the second his mind was totally someplace else, he was no longer praying properly, so I didn't need to pray behind him, so I broke my prayer and went home and prayed. So then the mother turned to Imam Ghazali. She said, is that true? He said, he put his head down in shame, and he said, yes, that's true. In the first rak'ah, I was focusing on Allah. But when the second rak'ah began, I was thinking about the fact that I have to give a dars after this salah, and I started thinking about the issues that I was going to discuss in that dars. So immediately, Imam Ghazali's mother began crying. And she said, both of my sons have failed me. She said, what? Both of my sons have failed me. One son in the middle of salah is thinking about his dars that he has to pray and is not focusing on Allah. And the other son, instead of focusing on Allah, is wondering what his brother is thinking during the salah. And so, from that, both of them learned a very important lesson. That the essence of our deeds is our sincerity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now look at the environment that these people grew up in. Right? Even their own mother would teach them essential lessons of sincerity throughout their lives. And that's what, there's a seed that's planted in every individual to be sincere to Allah. And that's what allows that to continue to be nourished and to continue to exist throughout the life of an individual. Now, on the other hand, we live in a very different environment. Very different. Because instead of being given that lesson of sincerity, we're given the lesson to be so many different people in so many different places. Right? Even our own parents will tell us to be one way here and be another way there. And our community tells us you should act in the masjid one way, and when you go outside of the masjid, you should act another way. And our families, they have this division within themselves. And so it creates within us a very dangerous division. So we have to be very, very careful that we come into environments where this initial seed that Allah plants of being sincere towards Him, that it's continued to be watered and its light is continually shed upon it. Because if that seed dies, then our acts of worship become very, very empty. And when they become empty, then the taste that exists within acts of worship becomes non-existent. So this is a challenge that faces all of us, especially in this environment. And this is why it's so important to regularly come to the masjid. It's so important to regularly assess our sincerity. It's so important to think about why we do what we do and who we are when we live amongst one another. Today, I can deceive people, but in the end, you can't deceive your soul. And in the end, you're definitely not going to deceive Allah. Right? On the Day of Judgment, everything that we do and the reasons for which we do it will be made evident. So it behooves us to recognize that in order to develop sincerity, you have to sit in the company of those who nourish sincerity. And that's the essence of the deen. The whole secret of the deen lies in sincerity, because with sincerity, a dime becomes $1 million. Right? And without sincerity, $1 million becomes worth less than a penny. So the whole magic of the deen lies in sincerity. Right? It's in the ikhlas of true worship for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us the tawfiq to be mukhlis in our ibadah of Him, and to be people who are true to themselves in their search of nearness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.